Hey everyone, welcome to the call. Nice to see you all. Thanks for joining. Rough night in the neighborhood. Everybody, things are rough right now. A few of my students this morning, we've been contemplating what's the best use of our time together. And just basically want to begin by saying it's a moment in time where I'm really grateful for this practice, because it gives me a mechanism for sorting through some of the confusion, kind of creating a little bit of order in my own cognition, and then having a relationship to the nervous system, to calming down, becoming present to what is, and then opening the heart in a way that can both include and discern, so that we can act with more patience and compassion in relationship to what's happening. But what I would like to do is, first of all, just appreciate you for the consistency with which you've been online on Sunday morning and kind of practicing and learning with me. And it's a moment where I think what I'd like to suggest is that we work with our cognition first today and then move into sitting practice, because I think sometimes it helps people to be able to express themselves, to create some meaning and some order in the mind, if that makes sense. So are you open to that approach? We'll start with the cognition, and then we'll move deeper into awareness, and then we'll end by committing to the wakefulness of our human heart. So first perspective, we're going to move through quite a few perspectives this morning, but I do want to say that, you know, right now, you know, the unrest, the violence, Salt Lake City had a bizarre incident last night with the guy with the crossbow. Did you guys see that online? That was intense. Yeah, he had basically a hunting bow that he brought out, which is, you know, a very serious weapon. And anyway, he was attacked and beat up, and his car was set on fire, and he was arrested for that, brandishing that crossbow. But that's not a good outcome for us. That is not an outcome. The seed of this is the racism in this country. And so I really want to make sure that that's the center of our conversation. But I also want to note that I do believe that the pandemic and the lockdown is fueling, in some ways, that the energy of it is fueled by the pandemic. I also want to say that I think the anxiety over at the economic system, people losing their jobs, people, you know, 25% of people have lost their jobs, that's fueling a lot of anxiety. The lack of leadership in the federal government right now. And also the internet has a role. Some of what we experience around the country has been, as I understand it from Vice News, is stoked by the alt-right. So there's a kind of perfect storm of a lot of conditions that are creating this. But I'm hoping for our purposes today that we can focus on George Floyd and that killing. And I hope that you're all open to that as a possibility. So the perspective I want you to start with, and this is really important, because when we're dealing with ourselves, we almost inevitably have to start with the emotions, because emotions always hijack cognition. So what I'd like you to do is, in a small group, talk about how I am affected this morning by this experience, you know, by what's happening in my city, by what's happening around the country. And this is a first person expression. So for me, Diane, what I notice, I'm disturbed. I feel super sad. I've kind of been crying the last couple of days off and on. I also feel an experience of responsibility, just ever so slightly, in terms of my leadership in this group, and how can I be accountable in a way that includes you and also makes meaning in a way that makes us better people. So I feel some responsibility in my system and a little bit of anxiety around, you know, how are we gonna make this work this morning? Because I'm sure you're feeling a lot too. So first person, include your feelings. That's the first most important perspective this morning. How are you personally affected by this? If you're in a group with somebody and they stray from first person and start talking about it or talking about them, invite them back into their own first person experience, okay? We're going to start there. Sound good? Okay, we'll see you back here in about 12 minutes. Hi, everybody. So we're going to use the integral map a little bit to help us navigate this. So by starting with first person, now keep in mind that as people express first person, your obligation is simply to be present to their truth, right? We don't have to compare notes. We don't have to correct each other. We don't have to educate each other. Right now, that's not what we're doing. Right now, what we're doing is simply giving everybody the place to be able to acknowledge what their personal experience is and the sovereignty of their own perspective. And then we're going to move into second person, hearing the perspectives of others. And then we're going to take a perspective on the issue of racism and what our obligations to changing it in this country and around the world is. But we're going to do it systematically. First, second, third, and then we'll do some sitting. Okay? Or maybe we'll do first, second, do some sitting, and then do third. Does that make sense to you guys all as a way to proceed? Okay, good. So I would love to hear from you again. Let's just model this, just your first person perspective. What is happening for you? What's on your mind? And most importantly, how do you feel? And our only obligation as listeners is just to affirm their reality, okay? First person. So Brad, do you want to start by sharing?
How I feel today?
Yeah, how you feel right now?
I feel really relieved. I feel incredibly relieved this morning from what could have happened last night.
Yeah.
When I heard they called the Ogden Police Department in, I was like, holy shit. It's not going to be pretty. But to the credit of those police officers, I feel like they had a lot of restraint last night.
Okay, good. Thank you. Okay. What else? Let's see what's happening. What's happening for you, Gabe, this morning?
Yeah, I was just sharing in my group. When I touch into it, one, I right now actually feel a little activated and vulnerable, I think, just sharing. But the feeling that's been most predominant, even as I speak about it now, is just disturbed and disturbed in the sense that the visual of the police officer on top of kneeling on top of George Floyd's neck, what felt different to me was that he was like totally calm. Like the police officer was totally calm. So that was particularly disturbing to me. There was nothing threatening in the situation. He was just calm and on the brother's neck. So that image has been with me.
Thanks, Gabe. Let's see, who else? Who would like to just share their first person? How you are, what's happening for you emotionally, what's affecting you this morning? I know you all had an opportunity to express yourselves, but it'd be nice for me to hear. Jeremy and then Judy. Go ahead, Jeremy.
For me, it's just sadness, like a lot in the chest, just there's confusion, but it's kind of resolving into a sadness area and just kind of the emotion turning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just curious how many people can relate to that, feeling just sad. Yeah. Judy, go ahead, please.
I think I'm feeling very, I think the best term really came from Zena, was very ashamed for our generation. Feel bad, guilty, angry. We had an opportunity in the 60s, and I thought we were off to a great start. You know, we had race riots, obviously terrible race riots in the 60s, but then we had the Civil Rights Act of 64 passed. 10 years old, and we had an affirmative action pass in the early 70s. And I just had great hope. I'm ashamed of our generation that we couldn't do any better than what we've seen happening this week in our country. And it comes on top of just enormous calamities. The, you know, 100,000 people in a couple months dead. Most disproportionately, again, people watching the unemployed, 40 million unemployed, disproportionately low income people of color.
How are you affected by that in your first person?
I'm affected by that because there's a deep kind of moral litmus in me that says this is just plain wrong. Mm-hmm. This is wrong. And, you know, I'm concerned we're headed for a period of great social unrest. Mm-hmm. Be a flash in the pan, mm-hmm. riots, because it has gone on so persistently.
Okay, dear. So just you're drifting a little to third, and I keep bringing you back to first. Okay.
Okay.
Just your own first person.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I just go back to shame. I feel ashamed that we can't do better. That I can't do better.
I want to comment on that a little bit, guys. I want to just let me give you a perspective that comes from our work in integral theory that maybe can help you, not to relieve your shame. I think we should, can all, those of us who are white can participate with that, but that everything that we did, the legislation, the affirmative action, the anti-discrimination policies, those were all steps forward, and they were all the exteriors. The problem is, and what we're facing now, is that we have to move from what we can do objectively to how do we deal with the hidden bias and the ethnocentrism and the deep habits of oppression that are held on the interior. So it's a different challenge, and it's a much harder challenge. So it isn't that those things failed. It's that now we understand how the subjectivity of ourselves and of the culture is at work. How do we get to that? How do we outlearn those habit patterns? You know, when Mike came onto the Supreme Court, you know, something, I don't know, Mike, you can correct me, but 6 out of 9 people on death row, what was the number, Mike, when you became the chief or when you came on the court?
5 out of 6.
5 out of 6 were Black or people of color?
Were Black in a state with 0.5% African-American. Yeah.
So there's deep hidden bias, even when the legislation and the, you know, so I want to give us credit for that and make a distinction that there's a much deeper, harder problem that we're confronting. And what are the ways to work with that? Okay. So that's just a comment for everybody, because it's important to understand that distinction. Otherwise, it looks like all that legislation, affirmative action, anti-discrimination work was not worthwhile. So back to your first person, there was somebody else in the stack. Who was it?
We've got Chelsea, Mark Evans, Kim McDaniel.
And Sue. Okay,
and Sue.
Great. Mm-hmm. Okay, back to your first person, guys.
Hi, Diane.
Hi.
I am feeling just like so out of the loop right now. I'm in California, and I haven't been on my phone or on the news. And so I just feel like out of the loop.
Mm-hmm. What's it like for you to be listening to what you're listening to this morning on being on the outside? Do you feel affected or changed by listening to what people are sharing? What's the impact on you?
I feel like an awareness of how, just like an excitement to get outside of myself. I've been like very turned inward and doing a lot of like inner work. Mm-hmm. And so I'm feeling this like excitement and relief of like, oh, I'm expanding and kind of getting outside of myself and sitting here on a Sunday talking about how I can be of change in the world. So
there's a shift in that way.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Okay, who's in the stack? Jules, can you help me, dear? How does one add themselves to the stack? Megan wants to know. Can you add Megan to the stack, Jules?
Sure. Got Mark Evans.
Mark Evans, go ahead.
I don't know who burned down that Minneapolis police station, but I hope it was Black people.
And okay, how do you feel this morning?
Okay.
Stay with your first person. So you are hoping anyway.
I'm proud of, assuming they did, I'm proud of the Black people who burned down that police station.
So it sounds to me like you feel angry.
Yeah.
And you're identifying with the destructiveness as a good thing.
Yeah, I hope, as a symbolic act.
Yeah, okay.
Or not so symbolic.
I notice that, you know, I'm saying be present, listen, and I notice like that I feel super threatened by what you're saying.
Really?
I'm just going to own that for some reason. I think I'm just scared of the violence, honestly, Mark, to be honest with you. Fair enough. I appreciate you for saying that, you know. Okay, anybody else? What's your first person experience? Who else is in the stack, Jules?
Megan Lundstock.
Can somebody write that down for me?
Yep, Jules? Got it.
Okay, good. Go ahead, Kim. First person, guys, then we're going to move to second. Go ahead.
I feel really sad. I feel worried. I finally talked to my friend last night. I've like never heard her so upset in our whole like friendship. And I just feel like really worried about her. And I feel really like angry at other like my like white friends on social media who are like, oh, I feel like they're trying to like prove that they're like woke or something. And I feel like really angry about that. I feel at the same time, like I feel pressure to post on social media to like in like solidarity or something. And I feel worried about my health because I have a lot of like physical, like chronic health conditions that really spike when I'm having a lot of like strong emotions. And I like really feel it this morning that I'm not taking care of processing my emotions and my body's kind of like taking it out on me. So I feel, yeah, I'm feeling like a lot of energy about all those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you. Does it help to speak to it at all? Do you notice?
Yeah, I think like going into the breakout group, like I realized like, oh, wow, like I talked to my friend like pretty late last night and then I kind of just like went to bed. And then I like woke up this morning in a lot of pain. And
no, I see. Yeah.
I like kind of realized like talking about it in the group that it was probably because I had a lot of like energy about that conversation and worry about it and her and that it just like, I basically like slept in it.
Yeah, I got you. That makes sense. Yeah, good. Hopefully you can allow it to move through you a little bit today.
Thanks.
So who else is left? Jules, and then we're going to move to second person. Go ahead. Who's left?
Sue,
go ahead, Sue. First person.
I have been owning my inner bigot.
Have you?
I kind of have a complex bunch of emotions going on. You know, what happened in Minneapolis, the man being murdered by the police officer was horrific. Yet, on the other hand, I live over on the west side in Rose Park, and two blocks away from me, down on North Temple and 6th West, in front of the Gateway Inn, is an open-air kind of just drug market with about 40 dealers and prostitutes and homeless people, and you know,
stay with us, dear. Stay in this moment with your first person. I feel myself moving to that. It's not that I don't want you to reference it, but stay here while you're describing it. What's the relevance right now to that?
I'm terrified. Awesome. I confronted two heroin junkies trying to steal stuff out of my yard and in my neighbor's yard, and I chased them off.
So you're terrified of the chaos and the social collapse?
Yes, I'm terrified of that. I'm terrified of junkies who are so amped up, you know, on meth and heroin. They have no...
Okay, dear, but I, what's happening in my mind, and I want to stop this, is when I hear that, because of our conversation, I'm seeing Black people. Is that what you're intending?
No.
Okay, good. All right, so I'm going to just guide us back because this is another example of what you're talking about. Like what happened last night is more evidence of this chaos and this breakdown in culture that's really scary to you. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay, good. I just don't want to make that link in the conversation without making it obvious. Does that make sense?
Right. Sue? Right.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of the dealers are Black guys. A lot of the dealers are Hispanic. A lot of the dealers are white guys. You know, there's a lot of them. The majority of the dealers standing out on 6th West are Black guys. So my mind goes to that because I'm so afraid. And then there's like this part of me that wants to be the good person, mm-hmm. and accept this and help them, yet I'm terrified of these people, and I have a lot of
black. Okay, so let's make some distinctions, because this is important, and we can do it. We can make these distinctions, and it's part of the anti-bigotry work that you were talking about, which is addiction, crime, social collapse is a huge problem, and it's really scary, right? But we want to unhook that from people of color, right? That's an important thing for us to unhook in our own mind, to say, I'm scared of the degradation in society. I'm scared that there's so much drug use. I'm scared that there's so much crime. And I'm scared that for whatever reason, all these people are living on the street, and I'm super affected by it, right? And then let's unhook that from people of color, because that's unfair. Does that make sense, everyone, that we're making that distinction? That's one of the things as white people we have to do, and that's what I heard you say. And what I think is strong in what you're saying is I'm scared to death of that, and I want to make sure that I'm not being a racist in terms of how I'm thinking about it. Is that fair, Sue?
Yeah. And it makes me feel sick. It makes me feel sick.
It's okay, though.
Realize this about myself.
Fair enough. It's a deep, deep, deep pattern in all of us. And that's why we have to do the inner work that I was talking to Judy about. It's not really about the outside. It's about what we carry on the inside right now. So thank you for sharing that, Sue. It gives us a chance to make these distinctions.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. We've got a couple more people, and then we're going to do something real important, and then we're going to sit. There's so much here, right? Thanks, Sue.
Megan, David, and Mark.
Go ahead, Megan.
So it's actually Daniel. I'm just hijacking Megan's Zoom sessions.
Okay.
So sorry for not knowing how to, I'll figure that out for next time.
Okay.
Something came up in the breakout session that
sure.
I didn't realize until the breakout session, really, that the core thing that I'm feeling everything else that people have mentioned, sadness, the disappointment, shame, all of those. But I realized that the core thing that I feel so much is an isolation and a disconnection from my society. Uh-huh. And there are people such as the people in this group, such as Megan, you know, and some friends that when I speak to them about this, they share my feelings, but I feel disconnected from the whole of society, mm-hmm. because this is even, I never understood like how big this problem still was. It wasn't until the last few years that it really started to rear its head. I was, you know, alive in the 90s. I remember Rodney King, and I remember all of the incidents between then, but it feels like it's really, really ramped up in the last 4 or 5 years, I think. And so I've just started to feel more and more like,
Can I just say something? Sure. This is just a little commentary. 4 or 5 years is 2016.
Yeah.
And electing somebody into leadership that actually fuels this is a huge problem.
Yes,
so absolutely. I do want to just notice that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, keep going, Daniel.
So I more and more am feeling like, and even the people who agree that it's a problem, they agree that it's a problem, and they say, yeah, that's sad, and I feel bad about it, but then they, you know, go on about their day as if nothing's wrong, which is fair. I mean, what can they do other than the way they conduct themselves? Mm-hmm. But so as this has increased more and more, and you're right, it was around this time of the, mm-hmm. I've just started to feel more and more like, I question myself. I'm like, am I insane? Am I missing something here? Mm-hmm. You know, what's wrong? Because I mean, I've been in groups of people where I'm wrong. I lived in the Deep South for about 10 years. And even then, it was more prevalent there, and I felt like I was the weird one. And so that, to me, you mentioned about policy changes and things like that, or it was mm-hmm. mentioned, and I agree that those are all things that have to happen, but it's systemic in people, I think. That, you know, it's a hearts and minds thing, and how do you change that? I mean,
we're gonna talk about that at the end,
yeah.
But what I hear you saying about you
yeah.
is that some part of you feels incoherent with what's happening. It's like not quite in your experience. You feel like it's gotten, racism has gotten worse and more amped up, and you're wondering kind of what your role is in it and how you can respond, yeah. is what I'm hearing. Yeah. So we'll address that after we sit, okay? So we're going to do, we're going to, there's one more person, right? Who hasn't spoken that wanted to?
Two more.
Yeah. Who are they? David?
Me and Mark.
Mark Evans?
I don't
Mark.
Know.
Which Mark, guys?
Mark Evans.
Mark, did you want to speak again?
No.
Okay.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Go ahead, David. So David's the last one, and then we're going to actually shift perspectives, okay? Go ahead, David.
Well, thank you for giving me space. I just want to share, I think what I'm feeling is this weird mixture of exhaustion, kind of shame, anger, and like disappointment. And I feel, so my hometown is Minneapolis, and my family's still in Minneapolis. And,
oh, wow.
You know, I called my mom yesterday to talk about it. And, you know, both my parents and my stepfather, they're Trump supporters, right? And mm-hmm. I feel I called to kind of talk about what happened, and it quickly devolves into a conversation of, you know, the conversation gets muddied, right? And my mother, you know, approves of Trump's, you know, when the looting starts, the shooting starts, commentary.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think I just wanted to talk about, I kept trying to bring it back to, there's a police officer just killed a guy in public, and, you know, like, this is what we're talking about. And I'm just like, everybody's got a fucking take, and I'm tired of everybody's take on the situation. And when we had our breakout group, we started to talk a little bit about solutions and root causes. And I just found this like anger welling up inside of me where I know we need to have those conversations, but I feel like right now I can't personally participate in them because I can't take everybody's take on what's going on here.
Hi, David. I'm curious. That it's first person. So we're in first person. So I need to just honor your perspective, but I'm just curious. In a certain way, I guess I want to say something. If the ego takes on everybody's perspective, it's exhausting. If awareness mm-hmm. takes on everybody's perspective, it's infinite.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think, but what worries me when we go into these conversations is that I feel like I can't emotionally deal with the complexity of it. And
okay.
I can't, you know, I feel like it drifts, right? And then we can't get to any sort of agreement on, yeah, I feel like it gets muddied, right? So it says, well, you know, like my father will say, you know, well, how long does the Black community have to take to get their act together, right? Or he'll say, you know, that guy still poses a threat to the officer. And I just feel like the conversation gets so muddied with all these different perspectives.
Yeah.
And I'm just not, I'm almost like subject to it, I guess. I just can't. Yeah,
fair enough. I hear what you're saying.
And then the shame is just like, you want to talk to people who you look up to, like my parents. I want to talk to them about this. And mm-hmm. and I can't even turn to them for a rational perspective. And then last night, my dad sent me a text saying he donated, you know, $50 in my name to the Derek Chauvin Defense Fund on GoFundMe. And I just said,
Jesus Christ, Dad. Just
like, yes. Like, fuck you. I actually said to him, you know, if you really did that, then I wish you the best of luck in the rest of your life. And I say goodbye. I'm just like, so I'm totally subject to a lot of things right now.
I hear you.
But this is just what's coming up from me. I'm just like exhausted and angry.
Yeah. Okay. So here's my suggestion. This is just me giving advice, guys. This is David's perspective. If you're tired, imagine how Black people feel. And the way we find the endurance, because it's something that we all have to endure and work towards, is by identifying with that which is greater than we are. So one of the things that the Black community has done, one of the things that came out of slavery was the Black church. The only way you can endure this kind of stuff is if you have deep, deep, deep spiritual roots. And that's what this practice is for, right? So use your fatigue to empathize and identify. A friend of mine's dad used to say, I'm tired from a very long time ago. That's what he would say. I'm tired from a very long time ago. So what we're going to do now, David, and everybody's going to do this, all I need you to do, everybody, is just to be present now to the second person perspective. And we're going to pick up very, very deliberately the perspective of Black people in the United States. For those of you who are not from the U.S., I know we have Ro on the call, and we have Alejandro, by the way. Alejandro, welcome to the call. And is there anybody else not from the U.S. on call? Because this is a very American-centric day. So I just want to acknowledge you and your patience, okay? All right, so what we're going to do now is we're going to use our awareness. There's nobody besides Gabe on the call who's Black. And so what we're going to do is we are going to, for a few moments, avail ourselves of what the Black perspective in the States is. Now, obviously, not every individual agrees, but there is a very fundamental experience that almost every Black person will agree about. Not everyone, but a lot of people. That's what's happening. So let's take their perspective right now and just express and listen, just like I'm asking David to do. Use his exhaustion to empathize. So what is the perspective of Black people in this country? Why is there rioting? Why are people so upset, right? There may be other things contributing, but there is a core to this. So let's speak on behalf of Black people right now. So Ro, what would you say?
Well, terror, just feeling terror and feeling angry.
Just feeling terrified.
Mm-hmm. And angry. Mm-hmm. Like enough is enough kind of quality.
Yeah, so the experience of not being safe in your own neighborhoods, in your own country, is an absolutely very common experience of people who are Black, for sure. That guy who was bird watching in Central Park, he says basically when he goes out to bird watch, he has to understand that if he's crawling around on the ground with binoculars as a Black man, that he might have the police called on him. Like, that's literally an experience he has on a daily basis. So let yourself just hear it and feel it, right? You don't have to do anything right now, guys. I'm just asking you, use your meditation practice and be present to a perspective that's different than the one you're used to. Okay? So Gabe, what are some perspectives from the identity of an African American that all of us on the call, maybe by being present to, our world gets a little bit bigger. We understand something more fundamental.
Mm-hmm. Well, from this perspective, I had a reaction to the statement that racism has like reared its head in the past couple of years. I would reframe that from my experience.
What would you say?
They're just more cameras. They're just more cameras filming the day-to-day activity of U.S., mm-hmm. you know? So that's one experience. It's chronic, and it's been chronic for myself and also for a lot of my peers. And I would say, just to own my own experience, I have light-skinned privilege, so I think I definitely experience it in a different way. The other thing that I would say is I think there's...
Let me just make a distinction, because I don't want to negate what Daniel said. Because in Daniel's first person, he's noticed that it's come up. He notices it in culture more. So for him, it's changed. Mm-hmm. For Gabe, it hasn't changed. It's been there all along. Right? That's one thing we want to notice, is that Gabe has a different experience than Daniel does. That's one of the important points. Right? Mm-hmm. Their experience is different. That's why we're having this conversation, so we can get to know each other more and we can actually start to clarify what's going on here if we're a person who isn't experiencing it. That's why it's so important that we listen and avail ourselves to the perspective of Black people or any person of color in this country. I mean, I can go to Fugon and he can tell experiences he's had that I'm sure every bit as problematic as, you know, anybody who's Black. So I might do that in just a moment. So keep going, Gabe. What are some other things that you think would be helpful for us to hear? And by the way, just so everybody knows, that exhaustion factor that Dave is pointing to, a lot of Black people feel that and say to us, Judy, to white people, this is your problem. You guys need to do this. You know, so the fact that Gabe's willing to share, at this point, a lot of people wouldn't. They'd be like, you go figure it out. We're not going to use our life force trying to teach you anymore about this. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Gabe, for being willing.
Yeah, totally. And I would just, you know, share, I think it's important not to generalize too much from what I'm saying. It's just, I'm also just a node.
Yeah,
I think what feels, what's coming for whatever reason in my mind is, I grew up in Brazil, so when I came here to the States, it felt very different to me in how we relate to race. But one of the experiences that I found interesting and totally disturbing was that a lot of my friends that had darker skin And this is like at Stanford. And the only reason I'm present at Stanford is because you have this image of an elite institution with all sorts of resources and theoretically people that are sound and healthy and well. But like the desire to like make their skin lighter. So like engaging in like bleaching practices, right? So just to kind of, there's a distortion that happens in our own self, sense of self-worth that is expresses itself in many different ways in my experience and in those around me. And I think it's part of just even noticing like when you go to the mall, like the advertising in the face, like that's changed actually a good amount, but you can still see it's more white centric and beauty is centered around that. So just like that's part of the whole gestalt of just the inner world as well. So just to share that, it's kind of related, but in a broader gestalt.
Does anybody want to reflect what he heard him say? And by the way, everybody, I just want to encourage you. So we're having a conversation today about racism, and we're actually trying to address, as Sue put it, our own bigotry and blind spots. And it's a much harder thing to do than to pass legislation. It requires a lot more willingness to look inward and to engage David, as you pointed out. It's much harder in a way to confront it. So just use your meditative discipline. One of the challenges when we hear these conversations is we if we're in a majority position, this can happen talking about sexism or racism or whatever it is. If we're in the majority, we start to have extreme feelings of guilt and a lot of intensity that something's wrong that we're a part of. My suggestion would be just to allow, just like in meditation, just allow the experience to move through. Don't feel like it's unpleasant and we want to get rid of it, but just let it move through and continue to just like you do when you sit, just be present and just receive. You don't have to, we're listening to the experience of Black people in this country, imagining what it is, hearing from Gabe. Right in this moment, there's nothing you have to do. And you don't have to get away from the feeling. You can just let it be there and let it move through you. Okay, it's a lot like sitting. So I'm wondering if anybody be willing to reflect what they heard Gabe say about the internalized racism that Black people often experience. Mike, do you want to reflect?
Yeah, I think there's also something Kim.
Wait, honey.
Yes.
Will you reflect what you heard Gabe say? Yeah, because what we're doing is we're actually taking his perspective and being with second person with his perspective. Go ahead.
What I heard him say was being raised in Brazil, he was aware of this color spectrum and how it affects how people are treated in that culture. And he said that he feels a certain privilege himself within the Black community because he's lighter skinned. And in the white community, that makes a difference. I heard him say that advertising, that racism has not appeared. Racism is a constant. Mm-hmm. That one down, at minimum one down for Black people in America is part of our history. It's always here. And then I heard him say, when he talked about people lightening or straightening their hair, that sort of thing.
Or bleaching.
Bleaching, which is really, you know, like the Michael Jackson phenomenon, it's really a manifestation that these people Black people feel shame at their bodies because of we have introjected that into them, to me. That's a place where I don't feel compassion, I feel empathy, and it feels horrible.
Mm-hmm. So now he's moving, guys. Just notice Mike's moving from hearing Gabe to now talking about how that affects him. So go ahead and say something about that since you're feeling so much, honey. How are you affected by it?
I know what it is to feel shame. I mean, I can imagine, you know, physical, you know, feel shame for your body, feel shame for things you've done, to feel one down just by existing. Mm-hmm. You know, I think white people can easily find things about themselves that they feel ashamed of, physical attributes they feel ashamed of.
Why don't we say, we rather than they?
We. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to sit in that place in a way is, to me, is very, very powerful in a way that thinking about it abstractly, third person, or even second person, doesn't work as deeply.
Well, that's to get back to the point I was making with Judy. This is the work that we're doing in our own interiors. This is why it's so much harder than passing legislation, doing anti-discrimination work. In the exteriors, it's this transformation in our interiors that's so challenging because we have to confront ourselves. And it's difficult. And a lot of it just has to do with being willing to listen and realize that if you're in a majority position, your experience might not be the same. So in order to understand, you've got to be able to listen, Mike, like you're doing to Gabe right now. Right? Yeah.
And it's a nice, I'm feeling this is a nice touch point. I'm now moving to second and third person thinking.
Yeah.
This is powerful because it's a place where every human being knows what shame is.
Yeah, and everybody knows what it's like to be one down.
That's
and
right.
What if being one down was every time you turned around? And what if you had to be afraid every time you were pulled over? What if, like our friend who's an African-American judge, he's a judge. Every time he goes in 7-Eleven, he's followed. You know, it's just like, God damn it. We just have to understand how endemic it is in our system. We have to care about changing it. That's the important point. I actually like to hear from Fugan if you'd like to share, because I know you haven't always had the best experiences in Salt Lake City, since we're talking to some degree about Salt Lake City today. Do you want to share it all, Dean?
Yeah, you know, one thing I was thinking of was earlier when I was like maybe, this was like 2005, and I was driving I was in a passenger seat of a car, and the driver was a friend of mine. He was white, and we weren't making the best choices in the world. Okay, we won't say what was in the car.
Dean. But, Dean, not making good choices. Anyway, go ahead.
He was driving, and he ended up driving a little bit faster and exceeding the speed limit, and then a cop started following us. Then he started going faster, and then he actually maneuvered and pulled into a parking lot, and we thought we got away, but the cop was right there behind us. He jumps out of the car, starts yelling at the cop, saying, "I'm a good kid. Look at me. I'm a good kid. I'm going on the way to a birthday party." And he talks himself out of it in less than 2 minutes. And I'm like, if it was me, there's no way I could have got away with something like that. I'd have to make hands were like visible.
What would it be like for you? Just share with us. Because we're listening right now. We're using our meditative awareness to simply listen to a person of color say, it's not the same for you when you get pulled over as it is for me. Let's just hear that, right? Let's just hear it. Some part of us says, yeah, and there's always exceptions. Dean's speeding and who knows, there's alcohol or whatever in the car. You contributed. We're set aside for a minute. What is the experience like for you to be pulled over that's different than for me to be pulled over? Just tell us about that. Oh, we lost you, dear. You're muted.
Yeah, I got to make sure that my hands are visible at all times. They're like, that I'm like not making any, you know, fast movements.
Would you get out of the car?
No. I'd have to wait for exactly for them, for the officer to,
tell you what to do. Yeah.
What to do next. I'm not going to volunteer any information. And then that comes across in some nervousness and some anxiety. Mm-hmm. For me, especially, I'm not someone that's going to maybe talk too much in that situation. So that can even, provoke some more suspiciousness from the officer, perhaps.
How do you address him or her?
Oh, yeah, it's always, you know, yes, sir, trying to, you know, yeah, it's very, in a submissive context, yeah, submissive role.
Is someone willing to use their listening skills and the quality of their presence just to reflect to Dean what it's like for him as a person of color to be pulled over? Does anybody want to reflect? Jamie, go ahead.
So, hard to take my own emotions out of this. What I heard Dean say
what was, I heard you say, you can talk to him. You can talk to Dean.
Okay. Dean, what I heard you say was that you were blown away at the kind of a 180 that your friend did in the same experience you would never dream of doing, and that your experience was one of, I must never act rash or brash or bold. I must always be passive and submissive and almost like the dog showing their tummy. I must show that I'm harmless at all times.
Mm-hmm. And these days, even when you are harmless and you're unarmed, you could still get killed. That's the rest of that sentence. Mm-hmm. So we just need to take that in, everybody. Now, that's not to say that you're not good folks, and that's not to say that your hearts aren't in the right place. That's not to say that I don't care about these issues and I haven't cared about them for a long time, but it's just that in certain moments we have work to do, and our work is to, in a certain way, let go of our perspective and receive someone else. Now, we should get back to David's dilemma because I think that's important, and after we sit, we'll do that. So somebody wants to ask Dean a question. So Ollie, when you ask him a question, then just reflect what you hear him say. Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead, Ellie.
What I heard you say, Dean, is...
No, you can ask him a question, and then when he answers, reflect.
Okay, sure. Okay. My question to you is, your behavior when you get pulled over by a cop, being submissive and showing your hands and very respectful, is that because you have had a bad experience and that's what you're basing that behavior on? Or is that because your feeling, your gut feeling, is that that's what you should do because your skin is darker?
It's a good question.
It's simple to avoid the potential of something negative happening in that particular moment. So how do I limit something happening right now? And how do I minimize that from happening?
Yeah, the question she's asking, Dean, is a little bit different. How did you learn that?
How did I learn that?
How did you learn that you can't do what that guy did? How did you learn that? Is that your question, Allie? Am I getting it right?
No. Exactly.
Oh, wow. I don't know. That's a good question. I can't really think upon a particular moment where I learned that. I think I might have heard it from other people, seen others, heard stories from other friends, or like what have happened when they acted in that same similar situation, and just like it, just for advice from others, just, you know, always, you know, how to respond in that situation. Yeah, I can't recall exactly a particular moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ellie, you want to just reflect what you heard him say?
Yeah, maybe. I think I'm still kind of processing, but Dean, what I've heard you say is, this is kind of a learned behavior from your community, and that some of the choices you make, it's not from personal experience, it's from conversations you've had, and those conversations have maybe produced a fear within you that's not from first person, but just from trying to avoid those experiences in your own life.
Good. Excellent. Well done. Good question and good reflection. Okay, so we're going to hear from Jeremy, and then we're going to sit, and then we're going to go to the third person. What do we do now? Okay, go ahead, Jeremy.
I have a question for Dean. If the officer was a different race, would it make a difference?
I don't remember if I ever been pulled over by an officer that wasn't white. I don't remember. But I don't think I would always, I think it doesn't make a difference. I would still respond in that situation. You know, there's still training that goes into the officer. that's instilled, you know, I think I remember an instance of actually reaching for a glove compartment kind of quickly and then was told not to. So now I was always waiting for someone to tell me what to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. You want me to reflect that back?
Yeah, go ahead, Jeremy. Great.
Okay. So what I heard you say, Dean, was that you don't recall ever being pulled over by anyone that wasn't white, and that you don't think it would make much of a difference between the race of the police officer, and that there may have been an instance in your past where going for a glove compartment fast may have caused some contention.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I just wonder, how's everybody doing? Are you able to calm your nervous system like you do when you sit and just receive and hear and listen without too much struggle? Or are you struggling? Are there things coming up for you that make it difficult? Thor, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Thanks for asking. It's, I guess I have a little bit of, the situation does have me a little bit stressed out at times. I am a little bit anxious. I'll be honest with you. I am a little bit anxious about what's going to happen in the world.
Yeah.
Dean, I understand how you feel. And I also have been in similar situations. I mean, I wasn't, I was just speeding and, in a small town, and I got pulled over, and there was a little bit of a, it was a very anxious producing situation also. And I also had to be very careful about what I did and said, and I was able to get out of the situation, but it could have been so much worse. And I think I've told Diane that story.
Yeah, you have.
I know how you feel, Dean. It's fucking scary as hell.
Good, you guys are doing great. Thank you, everybody, for your willingness. Really super appreciate it. Okay, so because in terms of like doing this internal work that I was talking to Judy about, one of the capacities that we have to be able to develop is use our meditative discipline to be present to others, to listen to others, and then when it kind of create like over intense feelings of guilt or over intense feelings of hopelessness or overly intense experience of, but there's a lot of factors, and there are a lot of great things about the police, and there are just a lot of multiple perspectives coming up, to just learn how to kind of calm yourself and continue to be present in a way that really honors a perspective that might be really different than your own. That's the practice, is really to be able to do that. And that's how we learn, and that's how we also come up with strategies for transforming our culture. And we really need to understand that because the work we're doing now is internal work, and it isn't work on the outside so much, it takes time. We're like redoing culture. And it's going to take, the ethnocentrism and the tribalism and the collapsing into our own group as a way of defending ourselves is really, really deep and really, really old. And the internet isn't helping us right now. That's one thing that we have to be aware of. But if you can be present on your cushion to whatever comes up for you, you can be present to whatever someone else is saying. So just a thing to think about it. And you can make choices in relationship to your parents. You might say something like, are you willing to hear what I have to say? I have a different perspective, or I don't agree with you. If you want me to share, I will. If you're not interested, I won't. Just taking those little stands or taking big stands, which is, this is from my perspective, what you're saying is creating the problem. And then you have to be willing to kind of have to fight. And sometimes we do, depending on what's happening. So I'm going to invite us. It's 11:15, guys. Do you guys want to just sit for 5 minutes and then we can talk about kind of where to go from here? How do you feel? Kind of third person. David Chilcott, go ahead. What are you thinking?
I'm a little mixed because I have stuff happening in my life based on the clock.
11:15. Yeah. Good point.
And I'm unresolved and would enjoy sitting and having more. I'm just trying to prioritize.
Okay, well, let's do this. So the class, the teaching ends at 11:15 on Sundays, and it's 11:15 now. So if you're interested in this topic, everybody, and we all should be at this point because it's all of our issue, there are two resources that we're going to share with you this morning that could be super helpful. One is a book called How to Be an Anti-Racist, which basically talks a lot about how we have to work with our own minds on the interior and within our own culture, and also the things that we can do in terms of our behaviors and the systems and the structures. One of the things I really appreciate about Mike is that when I was working at the courts, Mike was the chairman of the Racial and Ethnic Fairness Task Force in the judiciary in Utah. And basically for 5 years as a task force and for another 5 years as a commission, the task force looked super, super carefully at why, after all this good law and legislation, why people of color were so deeply overrepresented throughout the criminal justice system. So Michael's an example of somebody who's working in institutions to address this. How do we actually work with judges, with police officers, with parole officers? You know, how do we educate the public in order to like bring equity and fairness into the judiciary? So that's the systemic point of view. And part of what we have to do is overhaul our systems, and that makes it really difficult. But these two resources, one is How to Be an Anti-Racist, and then the other one is Why It's So Hard for White People to Talk About Racism. It actually talks about what happens and all the ways that we deflect and turn away from the conversation. So I want to super appreciate you for just being willing to have it this morning. I know that I've donate online, credit card, e-check, or PayPal to Two Arrows Zen. I'm like, is this the anti-defamation? Like, who are we sending money to? So apparently it's to us, Two Arrows. So if you have it in your heart to make a small donation, we could use it. So I'm going to stay online and just sit still for a few minutes and then answer any other questions that you might have this morning. It's till 11:30. So if you have the bandwidth and you want to stay online and just work now at kind of relaxing cognition and opening up awareness, we'll do that. So if you transition, thanks for being here. It's great to see you. And then we'll sit for 10, and then we'll have a few more minutes to close out any other kind of comments. Trying to think if we're going to maybe do a little anti-racism workshop down at the center. We'll see. So remember when I said that sometimes it helps to start with cognition and then go to the body and then open up awareness? So as you take your sitting posture, first thing, as we know, become aware of your sits bones, the long bones in your body, your knees, and particularly where your sits bones are in contact with the chair or the floor, so that you really feel the activation of gravity and the groundedness of this here and now moment. So the second thing I'd like to invite you to do is just notice whatever it is you're feeling or thinking right now. And if there's a quality of chaos or things being speeded up or processing, just simply let that be there and acknowledge it for what it is. We're doing a hard thing, a challenging thing. We're out of our habit right now. Whatever is present is good. Remember that we, sameness allows us to touch into our deepest nature, and difference allows us to grow as humans. So having conversation about difference, and if your nervous system is at all agitated, it means you're growing. You're growing your capacity. So allow yourself to feel the length of your spine all the way from your tailbone through your low and mid back, shoulders, neck, through the top of your head, and just feel that energy, that aspiration, the movement upward. So you've got the groundedness of gravity and the inclination to grow and change and move up the spine. Your shoulders are relaxed, your arms are heavy. Relax the back of your neck and jaw. And again, just whatever you're feeling, allow yourself to feel present to it. It's just feeling. Soften your face. Relax behind your eyes. And become aware of your breath. Now I feel agitation in my body and my breath is shallow and also somewhat uneven. So I'm going to just pay attention to my breath for a moment. There was a spontaneous impulse to breathe in more deeply and to exhale longer. So if that feels good to you, please do the same. And now bring your attention to your cognition or to your thinking. Trying to open up the space of mind, allowing whatever thought is there to be honored and acknowledged and released. So on the out-breath, allow whatever you're thinking to dissolve. Allow the cognitive mind to wind down and to move your attention from thinking and speaking to awareness itself. And as you sit as awareness, notice the body. Feel the breath and the emotions. And allow cognition to slow. There are three kinds of truths. There's your own personal truths. There's the truth that we can agree to. And there's empiric truth. Third person truths. Just allow your longing for truth to be acknowledged. What is true? What is true in this moment? For me, what is true is it's very challenging to be a human being. And we also can develop skills and our spiritual awareness, which is a great asset in times like this. So for a moment, just as a way to conclude this moment of sitting, bring your attention to your heart center. And touch into just a moment for, touch into what you want most from this life for you. And then as you acknowledge whatever that is, see if you can extend that same wish to all humans, to all beings. If your wish is for inner peace, extend that to all beings. If your wish is for justice, extend that to all beings.
If your wish is wisdom and clarity, extend that to all people. The Buddha said that to be a human being is to suffer. And yet there is a way to work with that suffering. And that's what this practice is for. So thank you for sitting with us. Short one this morning. So I would just pose this to everybody for the next few minutes. What do you need to say or do or ask that would help you to feel complete? Alejandro, what's it like for you being in Mexico to listen to this conversation?
Hi, everybody. Well, at first it's kind of overwhelming because I feel like in the obligation of knowing this, and I didn't know what was happening over there. So, first of all, it enters this voice in my head that, oh, you should be more involved in the world situation and knowing what's going on in other places, and you know. Mm. And but on the other side, I feel really glad of being part of this community. Mm. Trying to be more conscious about what's going on and how from your own being can contribute to this and what's going on. But yeah, most of all, it's overwhelming.
Yeah. Well, I really want to appreciate you for being willing to stay with it, because you also could have just signed out, you know. You're in Mexico. How does this apply to you? So I just want to appreciate you for hanging in there and listening and being present. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
What do you need to do or say or ask or whatever to feel complete today?
Me or the whole group?
The whole group. I'm sorry, Alejandro. Yeah. What do you need to do to feel complete? I just want to make sure loose threads. There's so much to be said and so much to be explored. And just want to thank you for being willing to be present and allowing me to, you know, say let's just address racism today a little bit.
Daniel has his hand up.
Daniel, please.
It's actually Megan this time.
Oh, hi, Megan.
One of the things that I felt able to really appreciate just in sitting was just in answering the question of what I need to be able to do to feel more complete. Mm-hmm. I felt pretty aware of the luxuries that I have that keep me out of having to be uncomfortable on a daily basis. Even things like just staying worried about things that work obligations, or knowing that I have plants to plant, or these things that are really luxuries as far as things that I would be occupied with. And so I just felt a level of awareness of, I either need to do those things if they're worries on my mind and then be free of them, or realize that they are luxuries to be worrying about. It feels relieving to know that that's something that I can do to feel more complete in all of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, awesome. Yeah, some people would use the word privilege, you know, that we have the privilege in some ways of being able to do other things where some people don't have that. So I really appreciate you just acknowledging that. Thanks, Megan. Great. David, how are you feeling? Because I kind of left you hanging there with that exhaustion thing.
I'm feeling less exhausted now, actually. I think it was helpful to hear Gabe and Dean kind of hear their perspective, and that helped me actually reorient to, like, this is what we're paying attention to. I think what happened in my conversation with my parents, suddenly my attention was going to, is the complexity of the things I was dealing with. So are we talking about race now? Are we talking about our relationship?
Sure.
Are we talking about election? Yeah. And so I think my exhaustion, what I've come to realize is my exhaustion was really not about racism, the topic, and solving this. It's more about all the other issues that I'm juggling.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And it's hard. I mean, it's hard to encounter people in our own families where we're like, this is the problem, you know? I mean, that's a really hard thing. I experience it all the time. So I just want to empathize with you for that. I didn't empathize with you enough. Yeah. Hey, by the way, you guys, let's end with a funny story, okay? Because it's still a good day, and we still are have the opportunity to practice and love each other, but I have to tell you a funny story. So Rob McNamara, who studies with me, we had a problem one night down at the center. It was the end of the session and we had a party, and somebody came to the party with a young child. It was her boyfriend's kid, and he was like 10 years old. And at a certain point, I just was like, what is this kid doing here? It's like 11 at night, and this isn't even the parent, and the kid should be home. And so Rob McNamara went with this woman who had brought him and this child, and they went to take him home. And one thing led to another, and the cops called, I mean, the boyfriend called the cops on the woman for stealing his son, and Rob was with him. And everything just got super crazy. And Rob was calling us, and by now it's like 1 o'clock in the morning or something like that, and Fugan was there. We were hanging out in the office together, and Rob was calling saying, shit, you know, the cops just came and they pulled in behind me, and so every time Rob would call, Fugan would pick up the phone and say, Rob, never pull into a driveway, you know, you're going to get blocked in there. Or he would say, be sure to call him officer. Or he'd say to Rob, keep your hands inside the car. Do you remember that, Fugan, when you were coaching Rob on how to deal with the police? Do you remember? It was hilarious. You were so funny. And he was great at it too. So I just want to end on a kind of a light note. So let's just say that all of our experiences can be helpful in certain moments. So Brad, thanks for being here, everybody. Sean, thanks for tuning in. I appreciate it. You know, I know it's a class on meditation, but you know, there's a lot of social unrest right now. So I thought it might be good to talk about it.